Good evening, and welcome to episode 10 of The Good, the Bad, and the Wretched. My name is Josh, and with me, as always, is Chris.
What's going on?
We're from the Video Graveyard, and we've been doing this for a few months now.
We're up to 10.
I can't believe we're up to 10. Double digits. It's kind of a big deal. It'll be more of a big deal when we're up to 100, though.
Yep.
Anyway, not to totally discount what we've done so far. Anyway, thanks for listening so far. Christmas just happened.
Yes,
it's
indeed.
Almost 2015.
Yep, tomorrow is New Year's Eve.
Yes, thank goodness.
It's 2015.
Well, 2014 was better than 2013 for me, but kind of looking forward to 2015.
Yeah.
Anyway, tonight's episode is going to be about sequels.
Yes.
Or sequelitis.
Sequelitis. Sounds like a jock itch almost.
Ooh, yeah.
I've got some bad sequelitis.
Yeah, well, it is kind of
Hopefully the doctor can get me a shot to clear that one up.
It is kind of a malady that's affected the film industry.
Yep.
But what would life be like without sequels?
Probably be a lot more original movies.
True. Well, that would be a life without remakes.
That's true, too.
I think sequels do serve a purpose, though. At any rate, we'll get to sequels in a minute, but for now, let's just get into what we've been watching lately.
Okay.
So I'll start. I guess the main thing that I've been doing is I've decided after our Halloween episode, after reviewing the Halloween series, I've decided that I need to be a little more versed with slasher movies, just because I didn't have a lot to say about some of the other franchises because it's been so long since I've seen them.
And also because you're sick of me making fun of you.
Well, there's that, and there's also the fact that we talked about the entire Halloween series and at the end kind of realized they weren't really as good as we remembered.
I definitely did.
So, and we were trying to rank like Friday the 13th versus Halloween versus Nightmare on Elm Street, and I've decided, you know what, I need to watch them all again just to have a more informed opinion. And so far, as I thought, Friday the 13th are my favorites right now.
Yeah, what part are you up to?
I'm only in part two.
Yeah.
But I did not remember part two at all. It's been so long since I've seen it. So we'll see what happens. Part one is a solid classic genre movie, but we all know that. Same with Elm Street one, same with Halloween one. But yeah. But part two I felt like carried the story along quite well.
Yeah, it was another one of those pick up where it ended kind of.
Yeah.
At the beginning, which is my favorite kind of sequel.
Yeah.
Is the ones that continue on from where it left off.
Yeah.
And there's only one thing I have to say about part two, and that's wheelchair.
Oh, I shouldn't be laughing at that. Isn't there a wheelchair guy in part three as well?
No.
The guy that gets his eye popped out in part three?
It's a girl who gets her eye popped out in part three.
No, I think it's a guy. He gets his head squeezed.
It's a girl.
I think it's a guy.
Well, you're watching him, so I guess you'll find out.
I think it's a guy in a wheelchair.
I think you're going to apologize to me after you've watched part three that I'm right and you're wrong.
Well, I guess we'll see, because normally in these cases, it turns out that I'm right and you're wrong. So.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I didn't know this was going to be a bitch fest.
Ooh.
So.
Anyway, I do think the Friday the 13th movies are probably the most fun to watch, but we'll get into these when we're actually talking about sequels.
I just wanted to ask you. On the Friday the 13th 2, you made a comment on Twitter about a certain actress.
Right.
Now, am I going to assume this is the Skinny Dipper?
Of course.
See, I can read you like a book. I automatically knew. I wasn't sure who it was, but I was like, that's got to be the chick who goes Skinny Dipping.
Well, it was more, I got to say, for that comment I made on Twitter, it was more about the short half cut off Mickey Mouse shirt and the really tight shorts and the butt shot.
Oh my God, you're such a perv.
Well, dude, I mean, if we're going to bring it up, let's talk about it. It wasn't the nudity that got me. It was that scene. And I was like, oh, okay.
You're like, she's okay.
No, I mean, it was a really cool Mickey Mouse shirt.
That's my bad Mickey Mouse laugh.
That was like Griffin Dunne in American Werewolf in London Mickey Mouse.
Probably.
Hi, Darren. No, but yeah, I mean, I did like the final girl in part one better. I did think part one, I mean, it's a classic
movie. You didn't
like
Amy Steele in part two?
I thought she was okay. I just felt like the ending went a bit too long in part two as opposed to part one.
Well, and also part two is what a lot of people seem to forget is that the actual hockey mask isn't anywhere in sight.
No, it's Baghead.
Yeah, it's like the town that dreaded sundown.
Yeah.
Baghead in part two. So that's kind of adds a new wrinkle to it.
Yeah.
And it was directed by Steve Miner, and he made the third one too. So
yeah,
I'm interested to see you compare those two. But like we were saying, we should probably do an episode on the Friday the 13th when you're finished.
I think we will. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Friday the 13th when we actually start talking about sequels as well. But I will be updating as I'm going through the series. So far, so good on the first two, though. I haven't been disappointed at all. I felt like it's been a solid series so far. But I know that the law of diminishing returns is going to kick in.
Well, from what I remember, because I'm a few years removed from them too, is that really in the first six, there was only one I didn't really care for.
Really?
And that was A New Beginning.
Right.
But all the other ones I thought were solid slasher movies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the Friday the 13th movies. You know what you're getting going in. They're not trying to reinvent the wheel every time.
No, they're not.
And that's what makes them watchable.
Yeah.
Is that you're just waiting to see how they're going to come up with Jason killing somebody.
Yeah.
Like it's more for the creativity of the deaths and things like that over anything else. Cause you know, the plot's just going to be your basic gather some people together in a place and kill them all.
Yeah. I mean, I did like how they opened up part two a bit. I mean, it wasn't just at the camp. I mean, they opened up a bit by going into like the town a bit and the bar and stuff like that.
I kind of like the opening shot of Friday too, when they have the little girl singing Itsy Bitsy Spider and and then like she like runs into Jason and kind of gets scared. I even like that because it was kind of like, well, that's kind of neat, like,
yeah,
because he's like supposedly he's this imposing, like, you know, at the time we didn't know it was grown up Jason, because if you remember at the end of part one, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but it was, you know, Jason wasn't really a integral part of the original.
No,
let's put it that way. So yeah, it's interesting to see where they took it.
Yeah.
And it actually worked pretty good for me, considering that it was illogical in a sense.
It did. And I've kind of been down on Steve Miner for a long time. It's interesting to be revisiting some of his work. I was really down on him. You're going to disagree, but we already talked about this on the Halloween episode. I didn't like H2O. I still don't. Yeah. And I thought it was kind of a stumble in the series.
You also don't like Warlock.
No, I don't.
And I
like
do Warlock. Like Warlock.
Well, I don't like Julian Sands.
Well, see, I think Warlock's a good movie, and that's Steve Miner. The only Steve Miner movie I can think of that I really don't like is his 2008 Day of the Dead.
Well, there's that too, right?
I mean, so, that was terrible.
But he did do Lake Placid, which I thought was okay. Yeah.
And he did Forever Young with Mel Gibson.
Anyways, moving on. Okay, so another movie I checked out is one called Fight Night, which I picked up for $2 at Dollarama. And this is a I'm pretty sure it was a direct-to-video underground fight movie starring a female fighter.
Is that the one
fighter
with the chick in the white tank top on the cover? Yeah. Okay.
So it's basically the sleazy promoter finds this girl who's like this kick-ass fighter and begins to put her into matches on the underground boxing circuit and their trials and tribulations. I thought it was quite enjoyable, actually. I sat through it. I enjoyed the movie. I thought the performances were pretty good. I didn't think it was as terrible. It wasn't as terrible as I was expecting. And I thought the fight scenes were pretty cool. But, you know, it's one of these take it or leave it things. But, if you see it for $2 a dollar around
it. Is it all no-name people in this?
All no-name people. Oh, okay. I didn't even write down the names just because none of them have really done anything. But it was all right.
I'm pretty sure that's the one I talked you into buying.
I think so, too. I mean, I do like those types of movies, but I do find they're pretty predictable and you kind of know what's going to happen. But it did have, like, a gangster element And I thought the lead guy did quite a good job as the sleazy promoter.
Now, was the female fighter, was she doing it because somebody in her family got killed in the fights, or she needed to raise money to pay for medical bill? It's always one of
from
two
what
or
I
three
remember
things.
Yeah, she was like squatting or something, and he was kind of blackmailed, or she got into some sort of brawl in a bar or something, and she ended up in jail and he bailed her out, and so she was kind of under his thumb. But it was a cute little movie, but nothing
cute?
Too special. Well, yeah, I don't know, cute's kind of
a brawling movie that's cute.
Well, it was cute. It wasn't like vicious. It was just sort of there. You know, cute, just sort of there.
Kind of like playing like a Fight Night game on your old Nintendo.
Yeah.
It's just cute.
Well, like, you know, if a girl calls me cute, I know I'm just kind of there. It's like not really an attraction. It's just you're just sort of there. Yeah, you're cute. You know, well, that's kind of like the next thing to ugly.
That's a way to look at it, I suppose.
I guess so, you know? Anyway, it's not like Care Bear cute. Because it is a fighting movie. But anyway, whoa.
Is there blood?
There's a little bit of blood. Actually, I thought the makeup effects on her, like post-fight, were pretty good. Hmm. She's beat up most of the movie.
So like how many fight scenes are we talking here?
Well, there was about six fight scenes.
Six fight scenes? Like major fight scenes, like set pieces.
Oh, there was, I'd say, two or three big fight scenes.
Now,
was
it like the
one,
same?
One really big
is the
one.
Same, is it kind of like blood sport in structure then, like a tournament?
No, it's not or tournament. It's just going to different matches. And, oh, okay. Yeah. And
so then, it's just about her. It's no, there's no, she's in every fight scene.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it now.
Anyway, after that shining recommendation, I also watched a movie called Blood Money.
Was that cute?
Yeah, it was kind of cute too, in a way. But, so this one was interesting because I didn't really mean to buy this movie. I was at the Salvation Army picking up some old VHS. And I picked up a movie called
Killing Machine.
Killing Machine with Jeff Speakman?
Jeff Wincott.
One of those Jeffs.
Jeff Wincott.
And lo and behold, when I took the tape out of the box when I got home, it wasn't Killing Machine.
Well, yeah, we were looking for a movie to watch, and I saw Killing Machine, and I was like, oh, shit, yeah, Killing Machine. Jeff Wincott, directed by Damien Lee, who a lot of B-movie people will know because he's this Canadian director producer who made all these like really low budget action movies in the 90s mostly with Jeff Wincott, and I was like, yeah, Killing Machine, we're totally gonna watch Killing Machine. And then we slipped the tape out of the box and it says Blood Money.
Yeah.
And yeah, our disappointment was pretty heavy in the room when that happened.
It was pretty disappointing, but after you left, I was sitting around the next day and OCD prevailed, and I had to watch this mystery tape called Blood Money. And lo and behold, when it started, Wings Hauser was a star.
Oh, well, that's good. Wings Hauser's always good for a laugh or two.
And yeah, it wasn't bad. Wasn't bad.
What's it about?
It's about counterfeiting. It's like a counterfeiting operation. And Wings Hauser's like this, you know, this grizzled cop that's like, you know, in a like troubled relationship and all this. And he's trying to take down this drug runner counterfeiter guy who's played by Robert Zadar, a.k.a. Maniac Cop.
The jaw that walked.
Exactly. So it turns out Wings and Robert were Vietnam buddies, and Robert was like this crazy Nam guy, and Wings was, you know, not so crazy, but the war had an effect on both of them, and they got back and went their separate ways, with Wings becoming a cop and Bobby becoming a counterfeiter drug lord guy or gangster guy. And anyway, it's just about how their paths keep crossing, and Robert's a real badass and Wings is out to take him down.
I like Wings in Psycho Mode more.
Oh, and Karen Black's in it too. So yeah, it had like this kind of cool cast of all these like guys that
considering it was a mystery movie.
Yeah.
You got The Jaw That Walks.
I enjoyed it. There was a good, like, you know, scene at the end where they're like trapped on an island, and Wings and his girlfriend, who Robert kidnapped, and he has to rescue her. And then Robert goes up in a helicopter, and I wonder if the helicopter explodes.
Get out of town. Really?
Yeah, and his girlfriend was pretty cute. Yeah, yeah, it wasn't bad.
Is it like a 90s movie?
Yeah, it was pretty solid, Wings Hauser mid-career movie.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, neither had I. But now I have.
I still would have enjoyed some Jeff Wincott Killing Machine action.
Yeah, well, anyway, the Wings Hauser one wasn't so bad. Anyway, another shining recommendation. Anyway, last but not least, I am going to give a shining recommendation. I watched a documentary called Bloodied But Unbowed. It's about the punk scene in Vancouver from 1977 to 1982. And for those of you who don't know, Vancouver had a really awesome punk scene back in the day that was right up there with, you know, New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles. We had a lot of great bands come out of here. The Subhumans, DOA.
No Means No.
They're from Victoria, actually. But yeah, there was a lot of, it was a really important scene, and a lot of really, really striking personalities from that time. One of my favorite artists from that time was a guy named Art Bergman, who no one really knows about. He was a singer of a band called the Young Canadians. and another band called Los Populeros, and another band called Poisoned. And there was a bit on Art in this documentary as well, and kind of sad what happened to him throughout his career. He basically kept getting, you know, on the verge of fame and then dropped by a label or drugs or whatever. But it was really interesting seeing all these guys and them looking back and just what a change they had made and just kind of what a hotbed for like social change Vancouver was. And this documentary is extremely well done. Unfortunately, it was a very, very limited release. It came out on DVD, super limited. The edition I have actually was limited to 150 copies, I believe. I have a 3-disc edition, but it also came out on regular DVD. But again, it's out of print now. You can still find out more about this movie online if you go to www.thepunkmovie.com, and there's all sorts of like archival interview footage and live footage, and it's a great piece of music history if you're not familiar with the scene in Vancouver and are a fan of punk rock. Well worth checking out. This thing's really, really well put together.
What year is it?
2011.
Okay, so it's fairly new too.
Yeah.
So yeah, because we were talking briefly about sort of we talked about Subhumans and DOA last episode.
Yeah, because Brian Goebel, yeah. Wimpy Roy, aka Wimpy Roy, recently passed away, and he was a member of the Subhumans. Yeah. And yeah, what can I say about him? But this covers all these bands, and it also covers the art house scene in Vancouver as well, with like our Eye Brain Eater, and there was a bunch of like kind of art bands as well, art punk, I guess you would call it. And then another band called the Dish Rags. They were one of the first female punk bands in the world. And I remember getting their, a 7-inch of theirs when I was a kid, like when I was like 10, I got this 7-inch with this song called Love Is Shit. And I totally clearly remember that, but I didn't really know much about the Dish Rags at the time. Since then I really dig them. They've got some really great songs. I Don't Love You is a famous one, and well, relatively famous. And, they were a pretty great band as well.
Now, there's a lot of, actual punk bands from British Columbia in general.
Oh yeah,
like even like I said, No Means No.
Yeah,
from Victoria, and then of course Dayglo Abortions.
Dayglos, yeah,
from Victoria as well. Yeah. And Dayglos are, as you know, they made my favorite punk album of all time.
Yeah,
with Fetus of Fetus.
Yeah, it's a great album.
And if you want to check out some of this stuff, I mean, go on YouTube. They have full albums on YouTube even that you can check out.
Yeah.
You can hear Fetus of Fetus fully on YouTube. You could hear probably these Dish Rags.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of stuff on YouTube.
Just go on YouTube, check it out. And
or check out, I mean, actually, the Punk Movie, if you look them up and go to their Facebook page, there's a ton of stuff. Yeah. And speaking of the Victoria scene, I was actually talking to some people last night about this subject. And apparently there's a similar documentary coming out about Victoria punk rock.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. I don't know much about it, but I think there's something in the works on that, too.
That'd be cool. Because you don't realize that the West Coast here, they had a pretty big punk scene back then. Like, there's a lot of bands coming that came out of BC here that are considered influential, like, you know, DOA.
Oh, DOA everyone knows DOA.
And bands like that. They're all influential bands. And, yeah. You know, I remember a story about Dayglos is that when I lived in Toronto, we went and saw L7.
Mm-hmm.
Who a lot of people remember as like one of those riot girl acts, and their most famous act was when the guitar player pulled out a used tampon
and
threw it at the crowd saying, "Eat my used tampon."
Yeah.
But they were playing with the Melvins, who at the time I hated the Melvins, but now I appreciate the shit out of.
Right.
But they were playing, and you know how bands always have opening music playing before they come on stage? Like the band picks the music that plays while the crowd's waiting to build up the anticipation. They're playing Dayglos. L7's playing Drugged and Driving by the Dayglos. And I'm just sitting there and I'm like, holy shit, they're playing the Dayglos. So I'm like jamming out to it, right? And all these people around me are like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
But I'm like, how can you not know? How can you be into L7 who are punk influenced and not know the Dayglo Abortions?
Yeah.
But I think it's because it was a riot girl band and these were like 14-year-old girls at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's really, truly interesting to look at the history of that. And I mean, one of the things I'm going to talk about what I've watched delves into a lot of history too.
Right. Well, the other thing I really liked about this is just and I already touched on is the social change that these guys were trying to bring around. And you know, protests has changed so much since those days in the early 80s. But just watching the way these guys operated and that they were trying to get messages across, Jerry Useless or Jerry Hanna from the Subhumans, he was actually a member of a group called the Squamish Five who blew up like a power plant in protest, and they also firebombed a bunch of porno stores and stuff. But I mean, these guys were serious business and they were really trying to make a difference. Not that I condone blowing shit up, and I don't think Jerry Hanna does either anymore, but it's just the fact that these guys were really,
they were living the punk rock aesthetic, yeah, is what they were
doing. But they were concerned about what was going on. Mm-hmm. It feels like things have changed a bit now, where it's more of the concern is more just getting wasted. Whereas back then, these guys were trying to make social change. Joey Shithead from DOA is still trying to make social change. They're playing a benefit concert in January it's an anti-pipeline benefit, and they're mm-hmm. giving all the money to protesters. Joey Shithead, or Joe Keithley, as he's now called, also ran for a member of parliament in the last election. So these guys are still active. Like, these guys meant what they were doing, and it's really inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they also touched on this. I remember when I was a kid, I went up to this park near my where I was working at the time. I was really young, and there was a baseball game, and my aunt's boyfriend was playing in it, but it was a baseball game with all these punk rockers. And the only one I knew back in that day was Bob Rock, because he was in the band called the Paolas at the time. Mm-hmm. He's since gone on to...
Well, yeah, he's produced, like, the Black Metallic album and, yeah, like, Dr. Feel Good by Motley Crue and stuff like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he was actually in the documentary, too, which is cool. But, yeah, it was neat going to that thing, but it's just funny watching this now, and they actually talked about, in the documentary... They were talking about these baseball games they used to have at this park that I saw this at.
Mm-hmm.
And just imagining now who was there that I didn't know about. Like, wow, it was a huge piece of history and I was there and I didn't even know it.
Well, I'm going to admit that I kind of like the Paolas.
Well, they had a few songs, but
I kind of like them for what they were.
Yeah, they were all right for what they were. Anyway, I'd really recommend this if you can find it. But at the very least, go check out their Facebook page and the website, and you know, just educate yourself a bit if you're into punk rock, old school punk, because I certainly am.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for me.
Well, since you're talking about old school punk and stuff, I've got a couple things, but I'm going to touch off on, I've just started watching the HBO series Sonic Highways.
Right.
Which is the 8-part Foo Fighters series about Dave Grohl and his band recording their new album. And what it is it's an 8-song album. They went and they recorded one song per city in these iconic cities where they had a big music scene in the old days and still do. So, like, the first episode started in Chicago.
Right.
Which is the home to Chess Records and all these other big things like that. And then the second episode I watched was in Washington, D.C., which is totally your punk thing because, you know, who comes from Washington, right?
Bad Brains.
Bad Brains, Fugazi.
Yeah, Minor Threat,
all those
Youth Brigade, I believe, yeah.
Scream, even the Dave Grohl's punk band Scream. So, I mean, there's a big punk history in Washington, D.C. And what makes the episode cool was that all these guys, they're interviewing them now. And they're saying, you know, there was no punk scene in Washington back when they started. And they made their own scene.
Yeah.
And people thought, punk scene's never going to cut it in Washington. All the heavy metal guys just want to kick your ass and everything, right? And they just went and did it. And then with Ian McKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat,
yeah,
he goes and makes his own record label, Discord.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how they would print these vinyls and then they would go to a print shop and make all those sleeves and then they would glue them by hand,
right,
all these 7 inches and everything, and they'd run like 1,000 copies and they were all handmade by these him and a bunch of people would just get together and make these records. And that's the thing about punk, is that people don't understand how do-it-yourself it was back in the day, and the drive they had to just get that stuff out there. They might not have been the most talented musicians in the world, but they had the drive to get their stuff out there and get their messages out there. And I think that ties into what you were talking about with your documentary there.
And, well, it was really an inspirational time, and it really does make me kind of sad. That shit can't happen today.
Well, no, because...
Like, fucking MP3s and all that's ruined it all.
Well,
like,
no, you just throw your song on SoundCloud and you're good to go, right?
Yeah, you just can't do it anymore. And it was a vital part of history, and yeah,
because
that's great. It's great that people are recognizing it.
Dave Grohl asked him, You know, flat out, he's like, how many records do you think Discord has sold since they were formed? He said 4 million.
Wow.
And for a label that was started by an 18-year-old kid,
yeah,
to sell 4 million albums is frigging astonishing.
Yeah.
I mean, and I love Fugazi. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I love old Bad Brains. I'm not so keen on their 90s stuff, right?
No.
But, I mean, old Bad Brains, that stuff's crazy. Because even when I was watching it with my girlfriend, she's like, she's looking at it, she's like, there was a black punk band in,
yeah,
back then. I'm like, yeah, man, Bad Brains. They were like so cutting edge because they were black.
Well, the thing about Bad Brains,
they had reggae tones later
they
in their career and
reggae
everything.
Music. I mean, Rock for Light is just such a classic album because of that.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing, right? And it's just interesting. The show is interesting to me because being a music nerd as well as a movie nerd, just seeing this history of the cities they're in and the recording studios they're in, and then having the personal A-side for Dave Grohl talking about his growing up and his musical influences is cool, because I've always said that if I had a chance to sit down with any musician and just hang out with them, it would probably be him.
Yeah.
Because he just seems so down to earth and cool, and that he would be like, you know, he'd just be like, yeah, man, what do you listen to? And, you know, you could shoot the shit about music with that guy and he would just be there.
So why are the Foo Fighters so not appealing to me?
I don't know. They're poppy, I guess. That's why.
Yeah, like, I don't get it with them.
Like, I'm not the hugest fan of their music, to be honest, but I do enjoy them because I just enjoy Dave Grohl's, like, his sensibilities, because he's just a cool guy who appreciates where he came from and appreciates what got him where he was and all these things he grew up on.
Well, he definitely doesn't forget where he came from. He's like the Quentin Tarantino of punk rock or something.
He's totally ego-free.
Well, and the Probot album was pretty great.
Probot's pretty kick-ass.
He was, like, bringing out, like, Wino from, like, yeah, St. Vitus doing songs.
Yeah,
and
brings,
like,
out...
Lemmy was on there, wasn't he?
Yeah, Lemmy and, like, Max from Sepultura.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kurt Briesch from DRI even was on it.
Yeah, so Probot was an album, yeah, Grohl put out where he did basic metal.
He
got different singers to
he
sing.
He grabbed all the guys who were metal singers who he loved when he was younger and made custom-made songs for each of them.
Yeah.
And they got to write their own lyrics and stuff, and they came in and recorded with him. It was like 12 tracks.
I wish he'd do that again.
So fucking cool.
It was so good.
If they made a Probot 2, I'd buy it in a minute.
Yeah.
I even like the bonus track he made called I Am the Warlock, where he had Jack Black doing the vocals.
Oh, did he?
It's pretty sweet.
It's a pretty good record.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's Sonic Highways is really cool, so if you haven't seen it, you should check it out. I'm only 2 episodes in of the 8, but I'm loving it so far.
Do we know what other cities he goes to?
I didn't look it up because I want to be surprised.
Okay, cool.
Because I feel that that's cool for me if I'm surprised at what cities he goes to, because then it also, I like getting history of what was going on in these cities. Like, because, you know, I always forgot Chess Records was from Chicago.
Right.
And that's a big blues-based and soul-based label with, you, yeah, know, John Lee Hooker and all those guys. And that's interesting
Chuck
to me.
Chuck Berry, I think.
Yeah, and Chuck, yeah, Berry and that. And that
Eddie Waters.
Eddie,
yeah,
James.
Yeah.
And that's just interesting because, you know, even these guys who are doing rock, they can't deny the influence of these blues guys. I,
yeah,
mean, look at the Rolling Stones, right? They're a big blues-influenced band, and everyone's influenced. Jack White, blues influence and everything. So it's just cool to get that history lesson while you're watching it, because it kind of, if you don't like the Foo Fighters, you're still getting something out of the show.
Yeah, I know he's got a lot more going for him than the Foo Fighters, thank God. But I mean, yeah, he just seems so much better than the Foo Fighters. That's my thing with the Foo Fighters.
Well, yeah.
Like, it just seems like he should be doing so much, but I guess he is.
Well, he's loving
doing where do I see this?
It's on HBO.
Okay.
So it's on repeats on HBO right now. So you could probably, if you're a subscriber, you could stream it or whatever. And it'll most likely come out on Blu-ray.
Cool.
I'm thinking. And the only other thing I watched was, last night I watched Electric Boogaloo, The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films.
And that's a documentary.
It's a documentary, yeah, about Canon Films.
Yeah.
Which,
how about that?
How about it? Canon Films, for those of us who aren't in the know, were a kind of a minor major studio, I guess you'd call them.
Yeah.
And they put out a lot of B movies that people in our age range who grew up in the 80s are still in love with. You know, they put out American Ninja, and, you know, they put out Last American Virgin.
Yeah.
And
they didn't seem like B movies when I was growing up.
No, they seemed like just awesome action movies
when
we were growing up.
This is Golden Globus, right?
Yeah, Golden Globus.
That's canon, right? Yeah. Is that, okay. So, because when I was growing up, and maybe it's just the movies I watched, but when I saw that, it was like seeing a Spielberg movie. Well, yeah, they were up there in that realm.
Menahem Golan and Yoram Globus were these Israeli producers, and they were making movies back in Israel in the 70s. And then in 1979, they purchased Canon Pictures, and which gave them a library of titles that had already been made. But then they decided they would make, you know, they're the guys who would, they hired Chuck Norris to do all his big movies. You know, they hired Charles Bronson when he was kind of waning in his career and gave him a bunch of action movies.
So were they responsible for like 10 to Midnight and yes. like Code of Silence?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Like all those kind of
Invasion USA.
Love that shit, man.
Missing in Action.
Yeah.
Death Wish 2-4. Take that from that what you want, because a lot of people hate those movies.
I think they did like Jackie Chan's The Protector.
They also unfortunately did Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren.
Right.
And the thing is, they're a studio. You're right. Like when you were a kid and you saw that Canon logo, or you saw a Golan Globus production.
I totally remember.
You were
that.
Like, "This is going to be good."
Yeah.
You're like, "This is going to kick some ass."
Exactly.
And usually, it delivered if you had your expectations low. Like their most insane movie they made, I think, is still Ninja 3: The Domination.
I feel like they did Gymkhata as well. I don't know.
They
if that's,
didn't.
No.
Okay. No. But I mean, think of Ninja 3.
It could have been.
They would have made it. The Ninja 3 is a ninja movie with a possession movie with Flashdance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy the kind of stuff they think. Like when you're watching a documentary, people are saying how usually the scripts were so haphazard because they had an idea and they just went with it and ran with it, kind of like Roger Corman did back in the day.
Yeah.
And they weren't the shrewdest of businessmen from the sounds of the documentary, and you know, but they were just like crazy shysters, it seems like Golan Globus. And you know, it was cool. It's by Mark Hartley directed it, and he made Not Quite Hollywood.
Right, and Machete Maidens Unleashed.
Machete Maidens Unleashed, which are two awesome movie documentaries as well. Not Quite Hollywood's about Ozploitation flicks, which were movies made in Australia, like the low budget B-movies made in Australia, like Man from Hong Kong and
Stunt Rock
and things like that. Two Brian Trenchard Smith movies, there what do you go. Know? And then the Machete Maidens and Heat was about all the movies made in the Philippines.
Yeah.
So Blood Beast Terror and all those kind of things. Raw Force.
Yeah.
Which was made in the Philippines. And it was just cool because Canon's always been the brand that they were my rock star brand when I was a kid, if I guess you would call it. Like anytime I saw that Canon logo, I'm like, yep.
Well, yeah, it does remind me a lot of Corman. I mean, the way they operated. And
yeah, like Corman's New World Pictures and things.
Except maybe not the same sort of film school-y vibe that Corman fostered.
Yeah.
These guys were more money men, it sounds like.
Well, they were, totally. Yeah. They just tried to make things that were money. But it's interesting because they did try and make some serious movies once in a while. Like Lady Chatterley's Lover with Sylvia Christel.
That was a money movie.
It was a money movie because it was all boobs, right? But they hired, like, you know, real directors to make movies, but they kind of were pushed to the side because they were making Death Wish 4, and they were making, like, you know, about Missing in Action 2 and Delta Force and all these cool action movies and stuff. And, you know, obviously American Ninja, which is my favorite Canon movie, probably.
Yeah. Did they do Revenge of the Ninja?
They did.
Yeah.
And I was wearing my Revenge of the Ninja t-shirt when I was watching that documentary. So I was like, I feel cool right now.
Right on.
But it's a lot of fun. It should be out soonish. I watched it on a streaming service.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm hoping it comes out on Blu-ray so I can buy it. But it's really great. If you like Mark Hartley's other documentaries, you'll love this one. And if you like Canon, you'll love it just simply because the amount of people they got to talk about Canon films is pretty stunning.
That's awesome.
So it was really cool.
Great. All right. So we'll get into our topic now. And so I don't know. You know, I've been trying to think of how to approach sequels. And I guess for me,
you approach sequels like I do, with trepidation.
Exactly. I guess for me, there's like four reasons that sequels are made. Okay. The first reason would be because it's a sequel's a part of a bigger story. So I'm like thinking like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Or the Kill Bill series.
Or The Matrix. Blech.
Or The Matrix. Or Star Wars. You know, stuff like that. Like, it's part of a bigger universe.
Yeah.
And they're telling a bigger story, but you kind of already know going in that this is just part of a bigger thing. The second reason that a sequel would be made is because there's characters that you want to follow along with.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking the new Star Trek movie. You want to see more of those guys. So you watch they make another Star Trek movie. The third reason would be because it's a universe that you want to be involved in more. Again, I'm thinking like I've already said Star Wars is part of the other one, but you know, you're in this crazy universe that's been created and you want to be involved in that universe more, and you want
to
be
like back to the future-y and stuff like that too.
Even the Living Dead movies, like the Romero movies, you know, they're all zombie movies, but you're not following the same characters, but you're in that sort of same thing, you know? And then the fourth reason is just a simple straight up cash grab,
which is the most common reason.
Absolutely the most common reason.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how I've looked at them and reasons why they're being made. But aside from that, I find a big thing with sequels, and I'm going to tie this into music a little bit, is I find with rock bands or rock and roll music in general, I'm not going to get into jazz and stuff, but just rock and roll, I've always found that bands kind of have this 5-album rule where they either start off with a great album and then slowly start going downhill, or their first 5 albums are really good, 5-ish albums, and then they start sucking. Mm-hmm. And I find that with film series as well. It doesn't necessarily get to 5 very often, but usually they start off strong and then they start falling away.
You get to 5 if you're a horror movie or you have Transformers in front of you.
Exactly. But like you'll find if you start to look at rock bands, pretty much any rock band you can think of, there's nothing good past the 5th album. There's the odd exception. Ragged Glory by Neil Young, I thought was a great album, and that was like his 12th album or something. But for the most part, and the Stones and the Beatles, you know, they were a little slow to get started. Dylan.
I'm trying to think of some. For the most part,
they start sucking within 5. So with sequels, it's the same concept. Usually the first one is really good. Sometimes the first one's not so good, and then the second one's really good. But it's pretty rare you start getting into 3, 4, and 5 where they're continuing to excel. Usually they're starting to bomb by that point.
I have a couple of examples of movies that are better than the originals, but we'll talk about that in a bit.
There's a few. Mm-hmm. There's a few. But for the most part, it's a very small bell curve, if there's a bell curve at all.
Very small.
And I also started comparing film series to bands as well, so maybe we'll get into that a little bit later as well.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's kind of the main thoughts I have on sequels. I think of what it would be like in a world without sequels, and we wouldn't have a lot of movies. I mean, there's a lot of freaking sequels out there.
Well, sequels and remakes, that's all it is.
But sequels in general, I mean, look at the 80s in the horror genre in particular. It was dominated by sequels and the action genre.
Yeah.
Tons. Like, there were so many sequels.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was 5 American Ninja movies.
It's ridiculous. How many Leprechaun movies were there? You just picked up the box set.
I just picked up the box set. And it's 7 movies.
Yeah. Like, 11 Friday the 13th movies
7
now.
Saws.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I don't know which direction you want to go here. I mean, do we want to just start naming?
Well, I thought we could start off by maybe talking about the first time we remember seeing a sequel, because I did write down the first time I remember a sequel. Now, this first sequel I really remember from a kid, being a kid, and I was excited about this sequel too, was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Right.
I mean, that's the first real sequel that I remember. That's the one that made me like aware of sequels more. That and maybe Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, Empire Strikes Back,
yeah,
for
like,
sure.
Like, those were the movies where you're like...
Yeah, and Temple of Doom, even though it theoretically was a prequel.
Yeah, but you're like, whoa, they brought back these characters who I really love.
And both of which are character... Well, I guess character and the world.
Yeah, and you're like, you're bringing us these characters who we loved them the first time out, and now they're back for more. And when you're a kid, that's just... You're like pleased about that. You're like, oh, cool.
You're psyched. I was so psyched to see Indy again.
Yeah, they're like, Indiana Jones is cool. What's he going to do this time? What kind of adventures is he going to get on?
Exactly.
Unfortunately, his adventures weren't as good.
Yeah.
But there was still moments in that. I still remember seeing it in the theaters and the kid I was with hiding behind his seat when the heart gets ripped out, you know?
Yeah, the scarring of all young children at that time.
I
mean,
I just remember that was my first sequel that I can really, really remember is Temple of Doom. What would yours be?
No, I think Temple of Doom would be up there. I mean, I think another one, because I remember quite vividly going to the first Star Trek movie. Now, I'm not a Trekkie by any stretch of the imagination, but I remember going to see Star Trek, the most motion picture in the theaters and being disappointed.
Like most people.
To say the least. And I was young. I mean, I don't remember when the first Star Trek came out.
79.
So I was 7. Yeah. oops, there's my age again. but then Wrath of Khan came out in 1982 and it blew my mind. And I was like, wow, okay, so they can make a good Star Trek movie. So that's a different kind of approach because I wasn't very excited about it, but I really do remember that movie just being the bee's knees. What the hell? Bee's knees? Cute? What the fuck?
Yeah, well, at least she threw a fuck in there to make it balance it out. But yeah, it's interesting that it was big franchises that we obviously became aware of sequels when we were kids, because when you're kids, you don't hunt down those kind of off the cuff kind of movies. Like when you're a kid, you're not watching, like, you know, the witchcraft series or something
the
Gate 2,
you
know? Right, you know, you're not looking for that kind of stuff. But I mean, that's what made me aware of sequels. And at the time, you know, now that it's all these years later, I mean, it's 30th anniversary of Temple of Doom now.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Now I'm just so getting tired of sequels because it's just been beaten into the ground, right? But I mean, back then when you're a kid, sequels were a fresh idea for you because you're like, it was just a continuation of these characters you loved and, you know, giving you a chance to revisit, like you said, these universes.
Well, and it's cool as long as you're not beating a dead horse. And again, five album rule, like, you don't want to be going back and back and back when it's not fun anymore. You should know when to stop. And a lot of these filmmakers didn't know when to stop. Indy is a perfect...
I haven't seen Crystal Skull.
No, they did know when to stop, but no. Let's bring them back 20 years later.
They should have stopped after Last Crusade.
Stopped. It would have been perfect. It was a nice little trilogy. Same with the original Star Wars.
I actually think I like Last Crusade the best out of the Indiana Jones movies.
Yeah, I've always liked it the least, but I need to revisit this.
I always liked the interplay between Sean Connery and Harrison Ford, and I think that's why I liked it the best, because they just were so funny playing off each other through the whole movie.
That's true.
And
what about Short Round?
Short Round. No time for love, Dr. Jones. Hold on to your potatoes. I mean, yeah, Short Round. You went into Goonies and annoyed me even more, so I guess we've got that.
Oh, come on. He wasn't annoying. Well, I guess he was.
He was fucking annoying in Goonies, man.
I guess he was. Ugh. Data? Was his name Data or something?
I don't know. Goonies on general annoys me as a movie just because all the kids do through that whole movie is yell at each other at the top of their lungs.
That's true.
So there's that.
Wow, you're a Goonies hater. I'm not a big fan either.
I'm kind of a Goonies hater.
It's one of those movies I just don't get the love.
I'm kind of a Goonies hater, but when I went to Cannon Beach in Oregon, I was excited to see where they filmed it.
Oh, did they film that at Cannon Beach?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's why so many people go to Cannon
Beach. That's what that big rock, the big rock is. If you watch Goonies at the beginning, they're looking at it through the little...
Oh, okay.
The little, whatever it is, the view thing that they can see where the pirate treasure is supposed to be. And that's Cannon Beach.
Okay.
Because I remember going to Cannon Beach and people's written on the boardwalks, Goonies forever and all this stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get the love for that movie. And it's interesting, talking about sequels, there was no sequel to that. Weird.
There was a video game sequel on Nintendo.
Oh, was there?
Yeah,
but why, like, that's another thing. Like, why wasn't there a sequel? Like, what merits
I think
making a sequel?
But I think Goonies didn't do that well at theaters when it first came
really?
Out.
Really? I remember when I was young, I actually remember going to the Merv Griffin show in L.A., I was on a trip to Disneyland or something with my parents, and Josh Brolin was on Merv Griffin promoting Goonies.
Oh, fuck. Jesus.
That's a long time ago.
The cast in Goonies, I mean, good cast. Just that movie annoys me.
Yeah, I don't like
that's
it.
That's probably
either.
the most annoying Richard Donner movie.
Yeah, what's
and
that?
And he made
Slice
all four
Slice
Lethal Weapon
something?
Movies.
What's that weird guy's name?
Oh,
Sloth.
Sloth.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, you guys!
Oh, no. And thought the truffle shuffle.
Thought I'd throw that out there for you just because. But, I mean, yeah, there's that. And so now I was thinking, like, why don't we kind of talk about, like, why don't we just hit sequels that we really, really dig?
All right.
And then we can move on to maybe doing sequels we don't dig so much.
Sure.
I wrote down something on my list, a couple things on my list I thought that would be fun to do would be like where we're like sequels where we're thinking, where we're like, what were they thinking when they made this? Because I have a couple written down under that category.
No, that's a good point, yeah.
And then I also have one where I call it the series that wouldn't die thread of this discussion, yeah. Where we bring up movies where I don't understand how they managed to get so many goddamn sequels.
For sure.
So let's start with that. Why don't you throw out a sequel at me and we'll see what where you go with this. See if you got any similars to me here.
So we're talking about like some of our favorites.
Some of our favorites, yeah.
Okay. Well, Superman 2.
Yeah.
I mean, Superman the movie, I remember when I was a kid, I was really into Superman, mm-hmm. and really loved the first movie. And then when Superman 2 came out theatrically, I remember going to see it and being so into it because of those the three
Zod
and Uhura, not Uhura, getting all my characters mixed up, but the three mm-hmm. black clad super villains from Krypton that Jor-El had cast away into the Forbidden Zone that came down to Earth to fuck shit up, and Terrence Stamp as Zod was like a yeah. super memorable villain. Christopher Reeve was back. Hackman was back as Lex Luthor, but in a very limited capacity.
Yeah,
Kidder was back yep. as Lois Lane. But I just thought the movie took the concept of the original. Reeve was getting more, seemed to be more comfortable in the role, and it just had a lot more action, and those villains were so compelling.
I feel like that's one of those movies that we can point at and say it's better than the original.
I would certainly say, I have a love for both of them. Yeah. I really like, because I think Hackman as Luther in the first movie was also a really great villain yeah. as well. I really like both of them, but it certainly wasn't worse than the original.
I think 2 took a way darker bent than the original.
It was definitely darker.
Too, which I kind of, at the time, I liked it because when you're a kid, you're kind of like, whoa, these guys are pretty evil. And,
yeah.
you know, they were scary.
Yeah.
Like, Zod and his clan were scary when you were a kid and you saw that movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like a lot of people do feel that part 2 is better than part 1.
Yeah, they're both really good. There's all that bullshit that was going on with the directors at the time. There was fighting with the producers. Mm-hmm. Donner got fired. Richard Donner got fired. Richard Lester picked up the slack. You know, they were trying to like piece together a movie from Donner's footage mm-hmm. and Lester putting in other footage. So it was a little messy that way, which may have had an effect on things. I mean, it'd be nice to know how that would have gone if things had gone smoothly.
I have to feel that maybe Donner, it's more his vision than Richard Lester's vision, because Richard Lester made Superman 3 and we know where that went. So
yeah, he did.
I feel like Donner put in the darker elements of part 2
yeah.
and Lester put in the more comedic, because if you see Superman 3 is light years away from Superman
absolutely.
1 and 2
yeah.
for quality. And then, of course, Cannon had to get a hold of Superman and run it into the ground in part 4. And
Superman 4 yeah. is... I had never seen it till last year.
Superman 4 is the most atrocious
it
thing.
It is so bad.
I mean, there's like that Electric Boogaloo documentary I was watching. There's a little thing about Superman 4 that
is
I couldn't
really?
Help but laugh at, because
oh my God.
They were like... They cast the hero, or not the hero, sorry, Nuclear Man.
Oh,
he was
God.
Apparently a Chippendales dancer.
Yeah, and he was so bad.
And he was terrible, and the special effects were terrible, but that was like... That was Cannon trying to get some legit cred by making a Superman movie.
It would look, it just looks so bad. Like, it just looks so cheap.
It's terrible.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
But I mean, yeah.
But the first two Superman movies, I mean, yeah, definitely a case where the sequel at least is
on
as
par.
Good as the original. Yeah. And maybe, depending on who you talk to, maybe a bit better.
And I kind of admit to liking Superman Returns.
I liked it when I saw it. Saw it in the theater.
So did I, and I haven't seen it since.
I've seen it since, didn't like it at all.
No, it doesn't hold up now.
Didn't hold up. And I haven't seen Man of Steel.
You haven't seen Man of Steel? So, if we're talking about, like, part two superhero ones, I'm going to bring up my favorite superhero sequel of all time, and that's Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, that's on my list as well.
The Sam Raimi one.
The Raimi one, yeah.
This is definitely a movie that surpasses the
original. Absolutely, yeah.
Because the original was origin stories. And if you grew up as a kid, you kind of knew the Spider-Man origin story anyway. So, I mean, it was obviously there for people who weren't familiar with Spider-Man, but us being huge nerds.
I didn't even know you watched Spider-Man movies.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the Sam Raimi ones at least.
Right.
But, I mean, what makes Spider-Man 2 so much better than the first one is that he's already established. We already know who Peter Parker is. They've added the elements of, you know, the kind of the, you know, the love story to it with her.
Kristen Dunst. Yeah.
Yeah, with Mary Jane.
Yeah.
And then you've got one kick-ass villain with Alfred Molina. Like, Dr. Octopus is
so memorable.
Friggin' sweet in that movie.
Like, a lot of these movies, like the superhero movies in particular, the villain is what's making these movies great.
I mean, Sam Raimi kind of shit the bed with Part 3, honestly. But I think it's
I didn't hate Part 3 as much as everyone else.
I think it's also because he didn't really want to do Part 3.
Right.
Like, I mean, he was kind of drawn, made to do Part 3. But Part... Bye-bye, beer. But Part 2 is just a super awesome movie. Like, there's no denying its action sequences are really good. But it added a lot more drama to it than you would expect from a superhero movie.
Yeah.
And that was definitely, like, probably my favorite movie of 2002 when it came out.
No, it was a pretty great movie.
I mean, that definitely surpasses Spider-Man.
Well, it's the one I remember when I think on the Spider-Man movies, like the Raimi ones. Absolutely, Part 2 is the one to remember, mainly due to Doc Ock. And then, of course, that big subway sequence. I mean, the action was just bigger, better.
Well, yeah, and then there was all that guilt stuff between James Franco and Peter Parker, because James Franco was the son of Green Goblin. And as we know, Green Goblin was kind of dispatched in the first movie.
Yeah.
And that kind of had that underlying guilt thing, because Peter Parker obviously knew his dad was Green Goblin, and it just kind of was way more dramatic than you would expect from a superhero movie, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, because most superhero movies are empty calories.
Yeah.
And I feel they did put a human element into Spider-Man 2, which really worked for it.
It was really good. Yeah. I mean, one that we don't think of that much. I mean, with all the superhero movies that are coming out, I don't think I'm even touching on any of the other, like the Avengers and all that stuff.
No, I'm definitely not.
But, I mean, of the superhero movies in the new sort of age.
The new wave of superhero movies.
Because the Spider-Man movies kind of started all that again, in my opinion.
They did.
And, I mean, that's definitely the one that stands out way more to me than all the Avengers movies and stuff. I mean, I like Captain America and everything, but these ones, they just don't seem to have the heart that one had.
Yeah, Spider-Man 2 has so much heart going for it and so much dramatic impact that you would not expect from a movie like that.
No, I agree. And I think it's also just Raimi getting comfortable with the budget and that scale of movie.
I mean, really, his training ground for the Spider-Man movies was Darkman, if you think about it. And the fact that it paid off so well in that movie is astonishing.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is a guy who started out filming a movie in the woods with demons.
Yeah.
And then made... which I'm going to proclaim it the
Evil
best.
Dead.
Yeah, Evil Dead. I'm going to proclaim Spider-Man 2 the best superhero movie ever made, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, I like I said, I still have a soft spot for the Superman movies, but, you know, it is a time where you can really look at the effects of today's day and age in a superhero movie, and you can really see what these effects are capable of as to making a superhero movie into a super movie.
Mm-hmm.
I feel also that with like the Spider-Man movie, I feel like Guillermo del Toro had a similar experience with Hellboy 2, because I really liked the first Hellboy movie, but I felt with Hellboy 2, same thing. It felt like he was getting comfortable with the budget, the money, and I felt like Hellboy 2 was just a step way above the original. I don't know if you've seen those ones.
I'm not a huge fan of the Hellboy movies.
I'm not a huge fan either, but just that sort of feeling of having a sequel with characters like that and a director that's got a lot of vision, being comfortable with the money and that type undertaking.
He's another guy who kind of had his training grounds for that movie when he made Blade 2.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people consider Blade 2 to be the best of that series. And
totally.
I'm not keen on the Blade movies either, particularly.
Yeah, no, neither am I.
But I mean, Blade 2 is definitely the most visually pleasing, which is what Del Toro's good at.
Yeah, for sure. So I think I'm going to go off the superhero Oh, no, I'm going to stay on it for a second here. Just because one more superhero movie that I think should be mentioned, and we've brought it up before in the past, is Tim Burton's Batman Returns.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I feel like this was a step up from the original Batman that Burton did.
I agree.
Nothing against Jack Nicholson as the Joker, but I remember Catwoman, and I remember the Penguin.
Well, if you watch the original now, Jack Nicholson is so over the top in it, mm-hmm, that it's not quite as cool as you remember it. And those friggin' god-awful Prince songs don't help very much, because those songs are pretty terrible.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing I like about, like we said on the Christmas episode when I brought up Batman, yeah, Returns, is the fact that it is a dark, grimy, gritty movie,
yeah,
even more so than the original. And it had unlikable people in it. Like, the Penguin was unlikable,
totally,
through the whole movie, but that's what made him more sadistic and threatening to me, like, than the Joker was, because the Joker was just the clown prince, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Heath Ledger did a better Joker in the Christopher Nolan movie,
yeah,
than Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson was more like the 1960s Batman series Joker.
Yeah.
And you know, I was 14 when Batman came out, so obviously I loved Batman at the time.
Yeah.
But in hindsight now, Batman Returns is definitely the one movie I revisit from the two Tim Burton ones.
It's the one that stands out.
Yeah.
And to me, the Nolan ones, they were okay to watch, but I don't have the love again. I don't quite get it. This is the way a lot of people are so into it. Even Heath Ledger, I haven't even seen the third one.
So
the third one, I thought it was okay. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not that interested in superhero movies in general anymore.
No.
There's just too many of them for me to care now.
Yeah.
Whereas when we were kids, they were event movies because they didn't make them very often.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now you know everything that's coming out for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree.
So
I guess another one, we're going to stay on the sequel surpassing the original. Now this one's, I'm a little torn on this one as to what I think here. But I know a lot of people do think that Aliens is better than Alien.
I am mixed.
I'm totally mixed because they're very different movies.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we're talking again about being brought into a world of, you know, these crazy creatures that H.R. Giger created. And but you've got a really moody, atmospheric, quiet, scary,
claustrophobic
horror movie,
yep,
from Ridley Scott. And then we've got a balls out, blow up shit action movie from James Cameron.
Yep.
So
each one has pros and cons.
They've each got pros and cons. They're in the same sort of world. They're definitely both alien movies,
mm-hmm,
but very different. And I think I am leaning towards the original just because I like that type of stuff a lot more. But when I was younger, definitely leaning
towards
Aliens.
That's totally what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Is that when I was a kid, Aliens all the way.
Yeah.
But now, being an adult,
yeah,
I appreciate Alien a hell of a lot more than I do Aliens.
Totally.
Because Alien was scary as hell.
Yeah.
Whereas Aliens was just a holy shit, they're blowing up aliens everywhere. This is fucking awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
People dying everywhere. And, you know, it's like, oh, she's in a robot suit and she's kicking that fucking queen's ass. You know, it's like, that was the cool stuff when you were a kid, when you didn't realize that, you know, tone and mood and everything were important factors to a movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
now we did have a really great cast in Aliens. Like, mm-hmm, I do think if Aliens didn't have the cast they had, like Jeanette Goldstein as Vasquez, Bill Paxton whining through the whole movie. Who was it? Lance Henriksen.
Lance Henriksen was Bishop. Yep.
Yep. I mean,
Paul Reiser.
Paul Reiser as the, yeah, well, we, no spoilers.
I still quote Aliens sometimes. Yeah. I still do the game over, man. It's game over.
Yeah, totally. But we did have Newt as well.
Yeah. And Newt was, yeah, better left.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I could have done without Newt.
But the thing about Aliens is if you look at anything that's in that universe after Aliens, it all kind of sticks with that Colonial Marines blow shit up,
yeah,
mold. Even the comic books they've produced since then and everything,
yeah,
none of it goes for that outright like mood of the original.
Yeah.
So Aliens is way more influential in that sense.
Absolutely.
Is that even the sequels that followed it followed that Aliens mold. The comic books have followed that Aliens mold. And, you know, I do kind of understand why people like Aliens better. in the sense that for entertainment's sake, Aliens definitely trumps Alien for that. If you want to see a movie that's just going to creep you out and, you know, that's the first one.
Yeah.
But if you're just looking for, like you said, balls out action, then yeah, I can understand why Aliens has
such when you're a teenager, that's what you're after.
Yeah. Kind of like Terminator and Terminator 2 and Terminator, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of people love Terminator 2 because it's balls to the wall action, whereas I prefer Terminator.
Yeah, but I never really leaned towards T2. Like when I was growing up, I liked T2, sure. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
But I never really went over. Like when I was a teenager, I think I did go over to you. I was like, fucking Aliens is the bomb.
Yeah.
Fuck Alien. And then when I grew up, I'm like, wait a second, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I never did that with Terminator 2. I never went, Terminator 2 is better than the first
one. A lot
of
my friends did.
Yeah.
And I had always, I wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
I'd always said Terminator all the way because of its dark. Like, I didn't want to see fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger saving John Connor. I want to see fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger destroying everybody. I wasn't into that. I was like, sure, this movie's cool. I mean, Linda Hamilton looks pretty buff and kicks some ass in it and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, I don't know about this. Because it was early days of CG effects. So I think people were just like, oh, that looks pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that was more style over substance in the long run.
Totally style over substance.
So, I mean, yeah.
As with Aliens, maybe.
Well, but I still like Aliens.
Anyway, I'm going to, again, as I'm going through life, I'm going to revisit these and both of them and
I think
see.
It's good for us to revisit series because we've been trying to do this on the website, too.
Yeah.
Where we revisit series and then do new write-ups on them and everything. Because if you think about it, as you get older, your perspective changes.
It's very interesting.
Because you have learned so much growing up that, you know, and you've experienced way more. When you're a kid, you're not looking for that connection with the characters and with the movie. You're just looking to be entertained. Whereas when you get to our age, you're looking for that connection with characters. You want to, you know, relate to them. You want to be able to put yourself in their shoes. And, you know, I can't see myself putting myself in the shoes of a colonial marine and blowing fucking aliens away, but I can see myself being trapped in on a freaking spaceship with these imposing creatures who could leap out of friggin' ventilation shafts at me anytime.
Yeah.
You know, that's more scary to me than anything Aliens had to bring to the table. I'm not discounting Aliens as a sequel. I still love it.
Yeah.
Like, it's still an entertaining flick.
Yeah.
But it's just the perspective of going back and revisiting these that I find really interesting because you kind of pick up on things. You either pick up on things that you kind of don't appreciate now about those movies that you didn't notice when you were younger, or you pick up on things that you now appreciate. Like, for example, if you watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Yeah.
I've picked up on things now that I appreciate.
Totally.
And I totally didn't appreciate it when it first came out. I was like, what the fuck? They put their chocolate in my peanut butter. You know, I was like, well, this isn't Texas Chainsaw. This is just a fucking stupid comedy with like Chop Top running around eating parts of his head and shit.
Yeah.
But now I appreciate the fact that what Tobey Hooper was doing was kind of a basic fuck you to the system. Like, I'm going to make the sequel, but I'm going to make it my way. I'm going to go for the satire and the gore that you guys were accusing me of, you know, you wanted that shit from the first movie. Here it is. Have fun. You know, and having Dennis Hopper having a chainsaw battle with Leatherface and, you know, if you're going to get anybody to have a chainsaw battle with Leatherface, you get Dennis Hopper in a cowboy hat. I mean, I really have learned to appreciate Texas Chainsaw 2 a lot more than I did when I was younger.
Yeah, and I haven't seen Chainsaw 2 since I was young, and I remember Chop Top, I remember the end.
Yeah.
But I don't remember much else.
But don't get me wrong, I still think Chop Top's an overrated character in the horror pantheon. I still think I still don't understand why people love him so much. I mean, he's amusing, but I just like the flow and the aesthetic of Texas Chainsaw 2 is way different than the original.
Yeah.
And when you're younger, you don't understand that because you're kind of expecting the same kind of deal. But then now being an adult and seeing it, I'm like, yeah, I totally get what they were going for there. That was kind of like them flipping the bird.
It was
totally to the
system.
Like, that's what that was.
It was nothing like the original.
No, nothing at all.
No.
Which is kind of one of the movies I was going to bring up in my What Were They Thinking sequels, but now I don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I'm still stuck on Newt. Fuck her. Like, what the hell? You know, just another thing just about aliens, like, like, the one thing I don't like about that is that fucking little girl, because you know how the ending, like the big ending in Aliens?
Yeah.
Where Sigourney,
get away from her, you bitch!
Like, really? Yeah. Really, Sigourney? You're gonna fucking go down and save this stupid little girl that you just met?
It's her motherly instinct.
I don't give a shit. She should have let her die. Sorry, Newt. Fuck you, Newt.
Oh my gosh. Sorry. I wonder if Newt's hot now.
She
as
is.
An adult.
She is hot. Oh, now.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe we should like Twitter message her saying "fuck you, Newt."
No, no. I'm sorry. I don't mean that really, but I do think they went to an awful lot of trouble for this little stupid girl.
Sigourney Weaver. Yeah, Ripley definitely did.
Like, come on. Yeah. Like all of these guys are put at risk for this stupid little girl.
Yeah.
What would that movie have been like without Newt? Maybe we'd be saying it was better than Alien. Anyway.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. So when we were in the car earlier this evening, another movie came up that I'd totally forgotten about for some reason, but it's one of my favorite movies of all time that happens to be a sequel, and that's Billy Jack.
Yep.
So this is definitely a case where... So Billy Jack first made an appearance in a biker movie called Born Losers.
Yeah.
And the character was so cool and really popular that he got his own movie. And well, Tom Laughlin was who played Billy Jack, directed and produced all of the Billy Jack movies, but was able to make a movie.
Born Losers, right?
Yeah, make a movie with Billy Jack. So the first movie, you know, was a very, you know, it was a pretty standard biker movie. It was fun. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was more well made than a lot of them. But Billy Jack really really let Laughlin show, you know, what he was trying to do as a filmmaker. And this, again, we've got a guy, you know, kind of like the punk rockers, is a guy like trying to convey a political message through a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But he does it in a way that's entertaining to the masses without trying to ram this message down your throat.
Yeah.
So basically, Billy Jack is this half Native American dude, and his girlfriend's running this very alternative kind of hippie school called a peace school. I think they call it a peace school. And then all these rednecks are trying to shut it down, and Billy Jack has to like step up and like, you know, take a stand.
Mm-hmm.
Also after the woman that he's in love with gets, you know, raped and all this stuff happens. Anyway, it's not as bad as it sounds, but like Billy Jack became kind of a cultural icon because of this movie. And when people think of Billy Jack, they think of Billy Jack. They don't think of Born Losers.
Nope.
They don't think of Billy Jack Goes to Washington. They don't think of the Trial of Billy Jack. They think of the movie Billy yeah. Jack.
I only think of Billy Jack because it's the only one I've seen.
Now, I did watch Trial of Billy Jack. Did enjoy it quite a bit. I thought it was a little more Laughlin, you know.
Billy Jack?
Hmm?
Yeah,
it's the one that directly follows Billy Jack. And it's, again, it's a little more Laughlin trying to maybe shove his message down a little more. And then Billy Jack Goes to Washington more so. But Billy Jack is a classic movie, and it's a character that we loved that was able to move on through sequels.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one where I would definitely absolutely say the sequel is better than the original. And it's become a cultural icon and one of my favorites. So, I mean, I just wanted to make sure that that came into this discussion, because when we're talking about sequels, we're often thinking of horror movies or action movies, like I mm-hmm. mentioned at the beginning. But this is one I even forgot about it. But, well, I mean, definitely a sequel.
And I think it's funny that the whole reason the conversation came up is because I had mentioned to you that I had seen that my girlfriend's dad had the DVD in his collection, and I had to point out to him that it was cool that he had Billy Jack. And then for him to say it's like one of his favorite movies makes him even more cool than he already was, I guess.
For sure, yeah.
Like, yeah, you like Motel Hell and Billy Jack? You're good in my books.
Wow, suck up.
Yeah, yeah, he doesn't listen. It's okay.
But yeah, Billy Jack was a pretty great dude.
We'll keep on this bent of like sequels being better than the originals. And this one I do agree with, but it's another one of those ones where I'm like, yeah, but if you have to take them for what they are, and that's The Road Warrior, which
you're
torn on this one.
Well, because I remember when we're talking about sequels,
mm-hmm.
I remember the fucking Road Warrior when I was a kid, but I didn't even know about Mad Max. So it's kind of weird.
I think it's because it was titled Mad Max 2 in Europe.
Yeah.
But then when they brought it over here, they kind of wanted to disassociate themselves from that movie. So they just titled it The Road Warrior and was like, oh, we'll totally pull the wool over everyone's eyes. And it worked.
Yeah.
Because most people didn't know it was a sequel to Mad Max.
No.
And at the time, the version of Mad Max that was floating around was the one that had that horrible dubbing over Mel Gibson's voice.
Right.
And, you know, it was the American International version, which was crap, which we thankfully got the real version on DVD years later. But the thing about Road Warrior was the reason it's a better sequel is because of its scale.
Oh, yeah.
Because Mad Max is a good movie on its own terms. It's a revenge movie.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of cool action stunts in it and everything like that. But Road Warrior took all that and just bumped it up to that next level that it needed to be bumped up to, because it's one of those post-apocalyptic movies where water is rare. So there's a gang of roving thieves. Or was it gasoline? I think it might have been gasoline.
It was gasoline because they were trying to truck the gasoline.
So they're getting the gasoline, and it's the roving band of thugs who are just, you know, going after these small collective societies of people to try and take all their gas. And Mad Max happens to come along and defend this one group. And this leads to a lot of large-scale action movies. And this movie being shot in the Australian desert makes it really striking, like more striking than most of these post-apocalyptic movies that were coming out, that came out in its wake too, because they went over the Philippines and tried to copy Mad Max and it just didn't work. And it was just action-packed from start to finish. There was that little feral kid with his boomerang. Takes the fingers off the bad guy, and the bad guy is just this big wrestler type with a hockey mask on who speaks through a microphone and threatens them.
And there was the guy with the mohawk.
Yeah, there's just so much cool stuff in that movie. And, you know, it's definitely, I love Mad Max, the original.
No, Mad Max is great, but you're absolutely right.
It's a different movie than Road Warrior.
It brings it to another level. Mm-hmm. And like that end chase sequence, they could never have done that in Mad Max.
Yeah.
And the characterizations, like they just made Max more into like kind of this like mythical character instead of just this cop dude who's like
this
trying
cop
to
who's
re-
out
get
to
revenge
his wife, and child's
child,
death.
Yeah. But, and the villains as well. I mean, that guy with the hockey mask, even though he doesn't really do much, iconic.
Mm-hmm.
The guy with the mohawk who jumps on the front of the truck, iconic. The kid, iconic.
Yep.
Like, you think of these guys when you hear Road Warrior, these images flash through your head.
Well, definitely.
You don't get those images when you think of Mad Max.
I mean, and Beyond Thunderdome's kind of worth forgetting about, honestly.
Well,
because Tina Turner.
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff in it I like. But it's like I was telling you earlier, what's my most anticipated movie of next year? And it's Fury Road, Mad Max Fury Road. Because if you watch those trailers, that totally takes me back to Road Warrior. And, you know,
I hope so, man.
It looks pretty fucking sweet.
It does look sweet. I mean, we talked about this on one of the earlier podcasts about that trailer, and who knows what's going to happen. I mean, I have high hopes, but, you know, I don't know. The age of stunts is gone. Like, that's the thing. And that end sequence in Mad Max is like a stunt. Like, it's a scene in movie history of a massively long stunt sequence with car chases that would all be CG'd.
But
now,
the reason I'm hedging my bets on this is because it's directed by George Miller,
who's how old though?
Yeah, but he made all three of the earlier ones.
True, but the last one was in like 1985.
And he's been trying to get this movie made for over 5 years.
And he made Babe in the meantime.
Well,
sorry, I'm not going to diss on George Miller. I'm just saying it's 20 years later.
I know, but I mean, it looks pretty damn good to me.
I hope it is.
Well, we'll see. You're probably going to be the one forced to go with me because no one else will.
I will go.
So we'll
I will go, I kind of wish Bell was back too, in some way.
Well, he's a bit too old for it too, though.
He is. But, you know, it's not going to be the same.
Yeah, but watch the whole series. But if you only have to watch one, watch Road Warrior.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I hear you. Okay, so I guess another, now you're not going to have much to contribute on this, but technically they are all sequels, and they're definitely ones I remember, and they're definitely ones that I love, but it's the entire Bond series.
Yeah, I don't have really a lot to add to this, because I remember watching some when I was younger on TV or with my dad and stuff, but I've never really been into them.
Yeah, now it's an interesting concept, because this is one where, again, we have a character that we're following along, and we love this character, and we want to see all his different adventures. But this one's been all over the place. Like, this one is following no bell curve. Like, this thing's been up and down like a EKG. You know, I mean, we started off with some of the Connery movies. Even those, up and down. Dr. No was great. Goldfinger was great. I wasn't so big on Thunderball. I wasn't so big on You Only Live Twice. Then you get into the Moore era. I really love Live and Let Die. It's probably my favorite of the series. Man with the Golden Gun was pretty good. Didn't really like Spy Who Loved Me. Then I thought Moonraker was pretty good. Then For Your Eyes Only was kind of down.
Octopussy
went up again. Yeah. View to a Kill went kind of down. So it's a really interesting series of movies, because it's not following the way sequels usually go. Because usually they start strong and then suck. But this one has literally been all over the place, and you never know what you're
going to
get.
I would like to say that I think View to a Kill should get some extra points for having Christopher Walken as a blonde-haired albino-type character and Grace Jones, if nothing else.
Of course, they all have things going for them, and now I can look back at View to a Kill and get a lot more out of it than I could.
Take it as camp.
You can watch it as a B-movie now.
Yeah.
Right? But, I mean, and even the Dalton era. I mean, back then, I didn't like them. Now, especially now that Brosnan came along and had his little era there, I think the Dalton movies are quite
Everybody
good.
Everyone kind of says the Dalton ones are the worst.
I think the Brosnan ones are the worst. Hmm. And it's funny how divided people are on these movies. I just think they're really interesting when we're talking about sequels. When people talk about sequels, no one ever brings up Bond. But every one of those movies is technically a sequel.
Well, yeah, because it's a continual story of the character.
And you usually knew. I mean, I know in the 70s and 80s, at the end of the Bond movie, you knew what the next Bond movie was going to be. It would say at the very end, Bond's going to return in blah blah blah, but it's a very, very interesting world. I wish you knew more about it. I'd really love to have a whole podcast about Bond movies, but
well, if you lend me your Bond movies, then maybe we'll get to that.
I really
point.
Love Bond movies, but they're technically sequels. But I just thought I'd bring it up because it's an anomaly.
Didn't they also try to put some continuity into the series though? Now with the Daniel Craig movies, didn't he get like his get revoked his and then. Like, his License to Kill or whatever got revoked, and then in the next movie he's kind of rogue. Did they do something like that? I kind of remember
Quantum of Solace followed Casino Royale, and it basically followed, like, it's one of these ones like Halloween 2. It's like immediately after Casino Royale ends, Quantum of Solace starts. Right. So you pretty much have to watch those two, like, back to back.
Oh, okay.
But I love the Craig movies, but I don't get Skyfall. It's another one I'm just like, what the fuck's the hoopla? Like, there's way better Bond movies out there than Skyfall, but everyone loves Skyfall. I mean, it was huge. Like, people that I didn't even know were Bond fans were going to it, that didn't even like go to Casino Royale. I don't know what all the hype was about with Skyfall. I didn't think it was that great. It was all right, but I didn't think it was that great.
I think you should lend me the Bond movies. Slowly.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty great. I mean, but again, you have ups and downs.
Yeah.
Definite.
Well,
ups
when they
and
make
downs.
That many movies, you're going to.
And you got to watch them from different perspective. I mean, Moonraker is maligned. But if you're looking at that as a B movie, it's fucking gold. So, like, I don't know, but I just
Isn't Moonraker the one where he's like goes in the spaceship?
Oh yeah.
Isn't
goes into
Jaws
space.
In that?
They always say these franchises jump the shark when they go into space.
Yep.
Bond went into space in Moonraker. But it also has a great, great stunt sequence in Rio de Janeiro on these cable cars on whatever Sugar Mountain or whatever that mountain's called in Rio. There's these two giant mountains. There's a big cable car that goes between them. And there's a fight on top of the cable car. And the thing about the Bond movies, and again, coming from a stunt fan, like, I grew up loving stunts, loving stuntmen. Like, I knew stuntmen by name. And the thing about these is they were really doing that shit. That wasn't any CGI. That was guys on top of cable cars in Rio fucking having a fist fight.
Yeah.
And that shit's crazy. But yeah, but then it goes from that to Bond in space. So, but it's entertaining, that's for sure. But people don't talk about the Bond movies with sequels, and they should more.
Well, I guess so. I guess so. I've personally not seen enough to be as compassionate, like as worked up as you, but...
You like blaxploitation. Watch Live and Let Die, man.
Is that a blaxploitation?
Your whole world will change.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I like the Wings song. Does that count for anything?
It's a great song.
So I'm just going to bring up just a handful more, and then I thought we could maybe move on to some what were they thinking sequels and things like that. What do you think about that?
Sure.
Another sequel I want to bring up that Sam Raimi was involved with, and I don't particularly like this better than the original, but it's worth mentioning, is obviously Evil Dead 2,
right?
Dead by Dawn. And the reason I want to mention this is because it's basically a remake,
right?
But a sequel at the same time, because it was Sam Raimi getting a bigger budget and saying, I'm going to make kind of a redo of Evil Dead 1 with some money.
Right.
And I mean, and I love Evil Dead 1 best because it's the one that's the most, you know, grindhousey, like, this is me and my buddies making this movie, and if you don't like it, too bad, this is what we want to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's more brutal than Evil Dead 2 because it doesn't go for comedy as much. You know, and it's got all the tree rape and all that kind of stuff that people really are, like, shocked by. But Evil Dead 2 is my entry drug into the Evil Dead series. That's the first one I had seen.
Right.
And that Three Stooges, like, comedy in it, like, you know, Bruce Campbell chainsawing off his own hand, yeah, and, like, the whole scene where he's, like, all the things around the cabin come to life and start laughing at him, and yeah, he joins in. It's just stuff like that won me over in that movie.
Totally.
And I think that Evil Dead 2 is a great, entertaining movie in its own right, and I definitely enjoy it more than Army of Darkness.
Mm.
But I wanted to bring it up because I know a lot of people really love Evil Dead 2 and think it's like one of the greatest horror movies ever made.
They do, yeah.
And I still prefer Evil Dead, but I think Evil Dead 2, if you're going to make a sequel, it's a good move to make a sequel like that because it shows that they hadn't forgotten what they were trying to do with the original movie, but they just improved upon it in a sense because they had more money to do more crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always stuck with the first Evil Dead. It's the one I always go back to. I mean, I've seen all three, but I haven't seen Evil Dead 2 in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause whenever I go back to that series, I go back to the first one.
Well, obviously you have to.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why, though. I mean, 'cause I do know how much people love Evil Dead 2, but I always, when I'm thinking which Evil Dead movie am I going to watch, I'm going to watch the first one.
I've always liked Evil Dead 2 because it's one of the first that I'd seen of that series. So obviously that's one of those movies that my grandma bought for me when she visited me from England. Really? So I'll always have memories attached to Evil Dead 2.
Awesome.
Because like I said before, she bought me Evil Dead 2, Toxic Avenger, and Killer Clowns from Outer Space on VHS.
Yeah.
So that instantly made her the best grandma on the face of the world.
That's great.
So I just wanted
to... And that's the one where Bruce is like, he's on it on his own through most of it, right?
Yeah.
And that's the one where he's like, woodshed.
Yeah.
And chainsaw. Or, yeah.
Yeah. That's the one where he's like looking in the mirror. He's like, I'm fine. I'm fine. Yeah. I'm fine. And then his reflection reaches out and grabs him. It's like, we just chopped up our girlfriend with a chainsaw. Does that sound fine?
Yeah.
You know, just stuff like that. I mean, it's totally a comedy of errors.
Well, and it made Bruce who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably made Raimi who he was.
Yeah, you can't discount Evil Dead 2 for sure.
Absolutely.
It's just, I love Evil Dead 1.
Yeah, for sure. All right. I guess another one I'd like to bring up, just this could be a bit controversial, but with the Die Hard series, I really liked Part 3 as well.
Oh, Die Hard with Vengeance is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that one as well, like, again, from opening up the series, like, kind of like what we talked about with some of the other movies where we've got, you know, Die Hard 1 was all in the office building. Die Hard 2 opens up the whole thing. To the city.
To the city.
Die Hard 2 was in the airport.
Oh,
Die
3, Hard sorry, sorry.
3 was in the whole city.
The whole city.
And it really...
Because it was that cat and mouse race against time.
Yeah. So just again, bringing a concept and bringing characters and kind of a world we like, but letting us see more of that.
Well, that
world.
Was like the first movie where they gave John McClane kind of like a loose sidekick too with the Samuel Jackson character. And Samuel Jackson was awesome. And
he was. It was a great sequel. And yeah, I mean, again, like we always think of the horror movies and stuff, but I mean, that was a great sequel.
Well, and they brought back John McTiernan from the original to do the third one, which also benefited quite a bit. Not to discount what Rennie Harlan did with the second one, because I really do.
I dig find all three.
I find the second one entertaining as well.
Yeah.
And like another example of an action franchise that kind of went a good way was Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
I've always liked Lethal Weapon 2. The
was
same
that the
as
one with
Lethal
Patsy
Weapon
Kensett? Was that... Was that the one with the...
I think so.
Which was the one with the house on the side of the hill with the...
I think that was 2.
Diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, that was 2. That was 2.
Yeah, because part 1 was Gary Busey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think part 2 is... Yeah, I agree. I mean, if that's the one with diplomatic immunity...
Lethal Weapon 2 is a great movie, too. Yeah. So it's like kind of like the Die Hard 3, like Die Hard with a Vengeance that you're talking. It's like they actually did manage to take some of these action series...
Yeah.
Without them getting stale, they took them in a direction that made them... a lot more fun, because by that time we were familiar with the characters and we kind of knew what they were going to do with them. Like in the first Lethal Weapon, you're just introduced to Murtaugh and Riggs and you're like, you kind of know them by the end of the movie, but Lethal Weapon 2 kind of played on their interplay a lot more, like their chemistry, because Mel Gibson and Danny Glover had great chemistry in Lethal Weapon.
They did,
And then just 2 just kind of took it up that notch that we were expecting, which made it a really, really good sequel as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're right. Die Hard with a Vengeance is pretty cool.
It really shows the way that you can use these to your advantage.
I actually kind of liked the fourth one too, though.
Yeah, it was okay.
It was the last one that was terrible.
The fourth one, I just think they waited too long.
Well, yeah. And then the last one is... Oh,
fuck. Yeah, so, don't get me started.
So brutal. Like... Instead of John McClane having a sidekick, he has his son.
Yeah.
Who doesn't look a thing like him, for starters, and is a... Oh, fuck.
The fourth one was okay. It was a good action movie, but I think, you know...
It could have been a non-Die Hard movie.
You could have just left the Diehards alone. Like, that's where you can fuck it up, right? Like, you had a good series. You had a good run. Why blow it? And same with, you know, just like we were talking about Indiana Jones. Like, you didn't need to do that. You had a really nice trilogy there, and then you fucked it up. So...
I think that the fourth one, if it wasn't a Die Hard movie, if just a Bruce Willis action vehicle, would have probably not been hated as much as it was.
Yeah.
But that last one, man, I remember how painful it was to watch, and I'm like, this is so far disconnected from the original that I was angry by the end of it.
I heard they're making another one. Is that?
Oh, fuck. They better not.
I don't know if I'm tripping or what, but
they better not.
I heard that.
That's all I got to say.
And just one more movie that I thought... people don't think about again with sequels, but one that did come way after the original that I thought was pretty solid was The Color of Money by Martin Scorsese.
Yep.
And where he brought Paul Newman's character from The Hustler and brought it back like 25 years later.
I think it's 16 years, wasn't it?
1961 and 1986.
Oh, okay.
So, but that was a really interesting concept, because you're bringing this character from a classic movie into the 80s, where he's now mentoring a younger character in his ways.
Yeah.
Just, and again, I don't have a lot to say about it, but just I thought
honestly seen it.
Yeah. Interesting concept.
Yeah. I mean, that was also in the heyday of Tom Cruise, too.
Totally.
Because he was coming off Top Gun and all that. So he was like at his peak of popularity there. And it's an interesting choice to bring such a screen legend like Paul Newman and a character he had played all those years ago back in.
Interesting concept.
Definitely.
I think that's a way that this stuff can work. And another one, bizarro one, but is Return to Oz. Like, again, just kind of takes a concept from a long time ago and twists it around and makes it fucked up.
Is Return to Oz...
Another beer, Josh.
Is Return to Oz really a sequel?
Technically,
like,
yeah.
Like, because if that's the case, it's like almost 50 years later.
I know.
I mean, and the only thing I remember about Return to Oz, because I haven't really seen it since I was a kid, was that it's really, really messed up.
Yeah.
Like, really dark.
Yeah, I want to watch it again, but anyway, I didn't really want to go into a discussion on it. Just wanted to bring these ones up, just as kind of anomalies in the whole sequel thing.
I have I have maybe like two more regular sequels I'd like to talk about.
Which is interesting. We haven't really talked about horror movies at all.
Well, we're going to get to that. I have two more sequels I want to bring up before we move on to... Before we move on to, like, the What Were They Thinking and Series That Won't Die, because then I kind of want to head... I want to start heading towards our wrap-up here, because I don't have tons of sequels I want to bring up. The only other two I want to bring up for ones that I personally really like that might not have the love that they deserve would be Clerks 2 by Kevin Smith. Because as much as I love Clerks, and a lot of people love Clerks, I thought Clerks 2 was pretty friggin' awesome, considering that it was like dipping back into that New Jersey well that Kevin Smith so enjoyed going to. And I just remember seeing it in theaters, and I had no expectations going into it, and I loved it.
Oh, the whole movie just makes me laugh.
Like, I love it. There's just so much stuff he put in it with those characters. Like, bringing back Randall and Dante, right? And
then, I thought you were talking about bringing back something else.
What, Pillow Pants?
No.
What are you talking about?
What was Randall trying to bring back?
Oh, yeah.
Let's not.
Yeah. It's okay. I'm bringing it back. But, yeah, it's just so great. It's like... It's everything you want. The explanation for the Lord of the Rings movies in that movie is so great.
What does he say again?
Where he's just like, he's having an argument with the guy between Lord of the Rings and I can't remember the other series. He's like, I'll show you your Lord of the Rings movies. And it just has him like, here's Lord of the Rings. And it shows him walking. And then he's like, here's part two. Shows him walking. He goes, here's part three. Shows him walking. Shows him throwing the ring and then shrugging and walking away. And that's the Lord of the Rings series there. I mean, I always found Kevin Smith was pretty witty. Like, he's got that sarcastic streak in him that I really liked.
I miss that Kevin Smith.
I really, really hope that Clerks 3 pans out, because he says he is trying to make it.
Yeah.
But it all depends on the principal actors coming back.
Right.
But for a movie that came 12 years after the original... Clerks 2 is pretty
good. It's pretty great, man.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
I mean, I had no expectations going in.
No.
And for my expectations to be surpassed.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's definitely one to bring up.
It's great. So, I mean, there's that one. I have one more, unless you have something.
No, go ahead.
The only other one I want to mention of ones that I think deserves a lot more love, and this is the horror one of the horror movies that you said we weren't really going to touch on, and this ties back to what we were talking about earlier, is I really, really, really love Jason Lives, Friday the 13th, Part 6.
Yeah.
That's my favorite of the entire series.
Yeah, the Friday movies are interesting. Like, I'm just going through them all again, so mm-hmm. I don't have a lot to say about them, but...
Like, I watch a Friday the 13th movie every year on Friday the 13th.
Right.
And I always seem to watch Jason Lives.
That's part six.
Yeah.
See, I remember really loving Jason Goes to Hell when it came out.
Yeah, well, not so much now.
And I don't know why, but I mean...
I can tell you exactly why I love Jason Lives, though. Because writer-director Tom McLaughlin told them he wanted to make it more kind of comedic, poke fun, satirical... jabs at the Jason franchise, and they let him do it, and he ran with it. He made it into a movie that kind of pokes fun of itself, but still stays true to what you want in a Friday the 13th movie. It's got the cool deaths, it's got all that kind of stuff, it's got Jason as an unstoppable killing machine, but it's got the humor in it that you're not kind of expecting, you know? Plus, it's got that awesome Alice Cooper soundtrack, you know? He's back, the man behind the mask,
that was that
and
one. Okay.
Teenage Frankenstein, and, you know, Jason killing those people in the RV.
It was so rad when we went and saw Cooper a few years ago, and he played that.
I know, I said to you when we went to see Cooper, I said, he better fucking play He's Back, the Man Behind the Mask.
Yeah, like either of us thought he would, and then he did. That was so good.
And I was like, oh, thank you, Cooper. You've made my dreams come true.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just a fun sequel. It's like, that's when you're up to part six. When you're up to part six in the series, you're not expecting that. You're not expecting to have this movie that you're just like, holy crap, that was good.
Yeah.
I mean, you really aren't.
No, not at all.
Those movies should have puttered out after the third one.
Yeah.
I mean, but to get to part six and for me to go, that's my favorite one.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
That says something.
Totally.
I mean, there's no other series I can point at that has that many sequels where I can say that part, any part past part two is my favorite one of the series.
Well, I'm looking forward to going through this again, because when we were talking about Savini, he came back for part four, right?
Yeah, he did. And part four is my second favorite.
So again, like, I think Friday the 13th might challenge the kind of standard on sequels a little bit.
Maybe a little bit, but it also depends on your viewpoint. And
it totally depends on the viewpoint, because again, with Halloween, so many people think that H2O was so great. I don't.
Well, and also it depends on your viewpoint too, in the fact that there's people out there who will not even acknowledge that horror movie sequels are good.
Exactly.
Because they just automatically think, well, it's a fucking horror movie, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, there's that factor too. Should we kind of do the what were you thinking sequels?
Sure.
Because I have a bunch. Do you have anything that you can think of? Like, I'm talking like sequels where you're like, you're watching it, and while you're watching it, you're thinking, what are they doing? Like, why are they doing this? This doesn't make any sense to me. Like, what exactly is running through their minds when they put this film in, when they greenlit this? Like, is there anything you can think of off the top of your head that you were thinking that when you were watching it?
Well, I can think of series where, like we've sort of talked about already, where it was kind of a beloved series and then they blow it by making another one. Like, example, the Romero Dead movies.
Yeah.
Like, I really think, I kind of get Land of the Dead, kinda. I'm still kind of, what are you thinking, though, too?
Yeah.
But after that, still calling things of the dead when they're not. Like, they are, I guess, because they're in the same universe, like I said. But, I'm kind of, what are you thinking?
Diary and Survival and things like that. Yeah, like, what I was looking at, and I mentioned Texas Chainsaw 2 earlier. What I was kind of looking at was sequels that where I was, like, watching it going, this is so disconnected from what happened before that I just don't get why this was made. Like, I'll give you an example. Highlander 2.
Right.
So Highlander 1 has, you know, it's set in modern day, but it has like that throwback to like, you know, the Scottish Highlands and, you know, things like that. And it's about being a mortal swordsman and having to like decapitate your enemies and that. And perfectly good movie, like a lot of fun, entertaining movie. Sean Connery, Christopher Lambert and that. And then along comes Highlander 2, The Quickening. I'm watching this movie and I'm like, what the fuck are they doing? Because not only do they set it in 2025, they make, there's like shit about the Highlanders being aliens and it's just this sci-fi thing. And you're like, where is this coming from? Like, how did we get from Sean Connery in a kilt in the Scottish Highlands teaching Christopher Lambert how to use a sword to like fucking aliens and like the ozone layer breaking down? I'm like, I don't get it. It's the most perplexing sequel I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah.
And it's terrible. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm kind of talking about when we're talking about what were you thinking? Like,
I kind of feel that way about Hellraiser too. Yeah. I know a lot of people love Hellraiser 2.
I don't really.
I don't at all. I mean, I was totally, that whole movie just felt like a fucking 80s acid trip. Like, I didn't know what the hell was going on.
That movie's got a lot of love, and
it does have a lot of love.
I've never understood it because I don't really care for it.
No, I mean, the first one was great, but then it's like they just went off the rails on that one.
Yeah, and then most of the ones I have here for What Were They Thinking are horror movies, like Slumber Party Massacre 2. Like, you've got a perfect...
That one might have improved on the original.
No way.
I don't know, man.
You've got a perfectly good exploitation movie, slasher movie with a guy with a drill killing girls at a slumber party. What do you get in part two? You get a guy...
he was awesome,
you get a
man.
Guy trying to be Elvis in a leather jacket with a fucking guitar with a drill on the end of it, invading people's nightmares like Freddy, and then killing them. Like...
I love that guy.
I just don't get it. I really don't get it. Like, he has his song and dance sequence halfway through the movie, and it's just like...
Maybe that'll be the next series I watch.
It's like... It's so weird, though. It's weird. What were you thinking when you made this movie? Like,
no, I totally hear what you're saying.
Why did you even have to make Slumber Party Massacre 2 to begin with? And why did it turn out so weird? Yeah. I'd really like to, like, poke at the people who made that and say, and ask them, like, just outright ask them, like, whose idea was this? Like, who was the friggin' brilliant person who decided to take this series in such a deranged way?
Well, I guess another one that comes to mind, just even looking at your shirt right now, is Zombie 3.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a classic. And, like, so this is, we're talking about the Italian zombie movies now, and Chris's shirt is Zombie, the Fulci Zombie Flesh Eaters. Yeah,
which I got from Cavity Colors. Check them out.
And then they made, what was it called again?
Cavity Colors.
Cavity Colors? Okay. Yeah. So then they made, then Fulci went on to do another zombie movie called Zombie 3, but ended up getting ill, or who knows what the hell happened, but Bruno Mattei, another Italian director, ended up taking over.
Not a very good Italian but director.
But it's a totally what the fuck are you thinking movie.
I love Zombie 3.
It's amazing, but nothing like Zombie.
It's amazing if you are into seeing flying zombie heads.
And like...
And just random...
Half corpses jumping out of water. And
random zombie attacks.
Baby zombies.
Make no sense.
Yeah.
It's a bizarre movie. And you can tell it was like filmed by two people and kind of thrown together at the end.
But what were they thinking? Like, why the hell even go there?
I don't know. I mean...
Well, we know why. Cash grab. But
it seems to be all horror movies. Like, because the only other one I had written down for this, for the what were they thinking, is Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2.
Yeah.
Because Prom Night 1 is... not my cup of tea, but it's a standard slasher movie with mystery elements, and I don't like Prom Night 1, but Prom Night 2 had a vengeful back from the dead prom queen killing people at Hamilton High using like Freddy-esque kind of stuff. Like she possesses one of the girls at the school and then goes around knocking off the children of the kids who burnt her alive at the prom. So it's totally Freddy. Like, it's totally Nightmare on Elm Street ripoff right there, right? But I love Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2 way more than I like the first one. But it's like, what were you thinking that you're taking this series, which was a standard slasher movie, 7 years later, you're doing this Freddy knockoff with a prom queen who's possessing people and then killing them? I'm like, this doesn't make any sense either. And then they continued on that bent with part 3, but then they went back to the slasher movie roots in part 4, but they had like a priest going around killing everybody, and it's just, that whole series is weird.
Yeah,
like I don't get it. But I mean, Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2 has that whole awesome scene in the locker room where our possessed Wendy Lyons, the actress, she's possessed by Mary Lou and she's like chasing a girl through the locker room buck naked, which I'm happy about that. But the girl hides in the locker, and because Mary Lou died in like the 50s, she's like always doing 50s quotes and stuff. She just goes a wop bob a loo bop a wop bam, and then the locker squisher and all the blood goes spraying out of the lockers because she makes the two lockers on each side of the girl crush her,
right?
And I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah,
so I mean, and it's got Michael Ironside.
There you go.
Can't go wrong with Michael
Ironside.
Can't
go wrong with
we've
Michael
said this in the past. So that's all I have for the ones for the what were you thinking?
Well, the thing with horror sequels is a lot of them, I mean, like we could go on
all
night
just
about
they
what
just
were you
cash
thinking.
In on what's
I mean,
popular.
The Leprechaun series in itself
in
is
space.
What were you thinking in the hood in space. But I mean, you know, the horror movie sequels for the most part, I mean, aside from some of the ones we've mentioned, you've got an original. Then you've got these sequels, which have like a series of scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So again, going back to like the rock and roll thing, the Ramones had a great first few albums. But after that, it was just songs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of the same thing. You know, they can start off really strong, but then those later sequels, you're remembering kills. You're remembering set pieces, but you're not really remembering the movies
like
anymore.
The Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like any of these franchises. So you might remember little bits and pieces, but it's usually the original, this one that you come back to.
Yeah.
Yeah. But overall, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we could talk a lot about all this stuff. I mean, I think a whole nother show perhaps could be movies we wish had become franchises in a
right.
way. Movies we wish we could have spent more characters
or
with,
movies we wish
with.
Would have never been franchises.
Yeah, we could have done that too.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them, we do wish that. I mean, I always find it bizarre. Like, one of my all-time favorite movies is The French Connection.
Yeah.
Why the hell did they make French Connection 2? Now, it's arguably not a bad movie.
Yeah, I don't mind
Popeye it. Popeye Doyle goes to France.
Yeah.
But totally unnecessary.
Why does it exist?
Didn't need to happen.
Why did they make 5 Death Wish movies?
Exactly. And when I look back on my favorite movies of all time, there's no sequels. There's no fucking sequel to The Warriors.
Yeah.
There's... not yet a sequel to Blade Runner.
Not yet. But it's coming.
There's no sequel to Boogie Nights.
That's true.
You know, I mean, a lot of the movies I love, there's no sequel.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the movies I love, there is. So it's a necessary evil, I think, in the world of film. But in the olden days, aside from Universal and Hammer, there wasn't a lot of sequels.
I think we should make, I think that would be an interesting thing to talk about in a future episode, is to talk about things, sequels in the sense of movies we believe should have sequels, and then movies we believe should have never had sequels. So that, maybe we'll do a sequel to our sequel episode.
I just high-fived Barrett. I didn't get it back, though, so it was kind of awkward. Oh, there it is.
I didn't know we were air high-fiving. If I would have known it was that kind of party, I would have put my dick in the mashed potatoes. Anyway, it's a Beastie Boys sample. Never mind.
Wow.
I would just like to touch on a couple.
It's ironic that you had mashed potatoes tonight.
I did, didn't I? I would like to touch on just one thing before we kind of wrap up here. I just want to talk quickly about series that won't die and just name them really quickly. Like, because is there any movie series you can think of that you're like, why are these still going?
Scream,
even though there's only four?
They're going to keep going.
They're making a TV show, yeah. I heard. But
die.
My big ones are like the ones we've, like Leprechaun that we talked about before. I'm like, why is this still going? Why is there seven movies? The last movie came out this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, why is this still going? Or Children of the Corn.
A big one.
Why is there eight Children of the Corn movies?
Why was
movies?
There any more than one?
Like, if you don't count the remake, why is there eight Children of the Corn movies? Why is, for that matter, is there eight Hellraiser movies?
Is there eight Hellraiser movies now? Wow.
Like, and another one I have written down here is a series called Witchcraft.
Well,
which started out as a low-budget
let's talk
skin
about Witchcraft.
In 1988. There's 13 of them.
Yeah, but we're looking for scenes in the Witchcraft movies, especially when you're a teenager.
I guess so, but I just don't understand why they made 13. If you want scenes like that, just go watch a porno.
Yeah, but Chris, when we were young, there was no internet.
I guess so, yes. You do have a point.
I totally understand the Witchcraft movies.
Okay, well.
Thank you, Julie Strain and Dahlia Shepherd.
Good on you, then. Good on you, because I still don't understand them. And a recent series that I really don't understand is Wrong Turn, how that got up to six.
That's pretty bizarre. And I don't know how Joyride's up to three, either.
Well, and then it's the guy who made Wrong Turn 3, 4, and 5 who did Joyride 3.
Oh, there you go.
So, I mean, yeah. And those are not supposed to be good sequels. I've only seen Wrong Turn up to 1 and 2, so I can't really say anything about
3
the other
was
ones.
Terrible. Yeah, I couldn't get through it. But yeah, it's up to 6 now.
I just don't get it.
No.
Like, that's the thing. Like, we all know that horror sequels are always keep going longer than they should. It's just, there's some I don't understand. Like,
the thing with Wrong Turn is I think the first one was really good.
I like the first two.
And I can't remember who did the effects. Was it Stan Winston? No. It was someone cool did the effects.
I'm not sure who did the effects.
But I did feel like that is a series that could have gone somewhere.
Yeah,
that,
even the second one was pretty good.
It was, well, it went comedy right away.
Mm-hmm.
It lost the horror immediately. Like, part two was comedy, in my opinion. And then part three was shit. But I mean, it could have, that's one I think could have maybe started a proper franchise had they stayed scary.
I mean, I can't say anything about Leprechaun because I bought Leprechaun on Blu-ray, so obviously I'm a little bit of a sucker. But I'm like, who wants seven Leprechaun movies?
Who wants a new Child's Play movie?
Obviously, I wanted seven Leprechaun movies because I just bought them. But I mean, who thought that was a good idea?
I know.
Like, yeah. What do you mean a new Child's Play movie?
There was Curse
of Chucky.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've heard it's quite good.
Yeah, well, that remains to be seen.
Well, we'll see. I have the box set of that to go through. So what we've gauged here is that sequels are a necessary evil in the film world, I think. But,
well, there'd be a lot less, like I said earlier, especially in the horror genre, there'd be a lot less. When we were looking at videos, when we were in the video store when we were young, mm-hmm. if sequels didn't exist, it would have been a very different world.
My opinion is basically that there's more bad sequels than there are worthy sequels. So what I'm hoping we've done by talking about ours is that maybe we've pushed you guys towards a couple of decent sequels, so at least you're not sitting there thinking, looking on your Netflix queue going, holy shit, they made another fucking Skulls movie? It's up to part 4?
Skulls.
You know, like,
seriously.
They made Wild Things part 5? What the fuck's going on here? So at least now you can maybe say, here's a couple of sequels you want to check out.
Yeah.
Hopefully we've helped push you in that direction to show you that not all sequels have to be terrible.
No.
Just a good majority of them, I think.
Yeah, yeah, definitely a good majority of them, but Death Race 3, like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. So, they're a necessary evil, like I said.
Yeah.
And
but they're not all necessarily evil.
Ah, air high five. There we go. See, there's another one. That time we actually did it correctly. But I think it would be interesting. I think we should think about that in the future, doing a we want sequels, we don't want sequels episode.
Yeah, I think that's a great
sequel
idea.
To a sequel.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think that's about all I have to talk about for that today. Yep. So let's wrap this bad boy up.
That's right. So thanks a lot for listening, everyone. You can find us on Twitter at Video Grave or
at GBW Podcast. Or at Video Graveyard if you feel like it.
Yeah. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/GBW Podcast. Or you can find us at on the web at www.thevideograveyard.com/GBW Podcast.
That's true. And if you would like, we would like, if you would go on to iTunes and subscribe. If you like, we would like. I almost sounded Chinese. We go on iTunes and subscribe to us and give us a rating. Then give us a rating and give us some, let us know what you like, what you don't like. Give us some topic ideas and we'll work on it. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we'd really appreciate some feedback.
We would definitely appreciate some feedback.
It's the least you could do. You're not paying for this.
Yeah, that's true. You don't have to be a sarcastic prick. Now everyone's going to be like, I'm fucking rate them a one because that Josh guy is such a...
Well, at least they'd rate us.
One's better than none. One's better than none. Okay, that's it. No more singing. Anyway, hope you guys have a great New Year's, since this will be coming out on either New Year's Day or the day after. So hopefully you had a good Christmas, a good New Year's, and we will talk to you next time.
All the best for 2015. Thank you.